Welcome to DMOU, Destination Marketing Organization University. I'm your host, Bill Geist. In the first decade of this millennium, DMOU was an innovative teleseminar series featuring in-depth interviews with the best and the brightest in the destination marketing space. Today, DMOU has returned, this time as a podcast with a brand new format. It's three questions and a bonus round. Some of these podcasts might go 15 minutes. Some could go 45. We just don't know. And that's going to be part of the fun of bringing DMOU back. And this edition of DMOU is sponsored by Total Destination Marketing, a boutique destination brand agency led by Bill Baker, who has a brand new book out called Place Branding for Small Cities, Regions, and Downtowns. I've had a chance to review his newest work, and it is a winner for anybody wishing to immerse themselves into place branding. And our friend and former CEO of the Durham CVB, Ren Bowman, went even further, saying Bill has taken a great book and unexpectedly made it way better. You can find Place Branding for Small Cities, Regions, and Downtowns, where else, but on Amazon.com. And now on to our show. Our guest today is Deb Archer, CDME, President and CEO of Destination Madison, formerly known as the Greater Madison Convention and Visitors Bureau, and the Madison Area Sports Commission, the official destination management organization for Greater Madison, Wisconsin, overseeing a combined staff of 35 with a budget of $6.7 million. Under her leadership, the GMCVB was one of the first U.S. DMOs to be accredited through the DMAP program. The Madison Area Sports Commission was named Sports Commission of the Year by the National Association of Sports Commissions, and the city competed for and hosted the U.S. Conference of Mayors, the World Stem Cell Summit, secured the Reebok CrossFit Games for multiple years, and attracted one of the first Ironman North America events in 2002, which continues today and for which Madison consistently is ranked among Ironman participants as best host city experience. Prior to Madison, Deb held leadership positions at the Kansas City CVB and the Park City, Utah CVB and Chamber of Commerce. She's a graduate of Michigan State University's School of Hospitality and Tourism, and she has served as chair of Destination International's Foundation Board of Trustees, also served on the Destination International's Board of Directors, and is a core course faculty leader and instructor and on the board for the industry's professional CDME certification program. Deb Archer, welcome to DMOU.
Hi, Bill. Great to be here. Very fun.
It is. It's so great. I mean, you know, we live not more than what, probably 30 miles away, and we so rarely get to sit down and just share stories and catch up.
This is wonderful, and I'm delighted to be invited.
Yeah, well, it's a great story, too. And as we're out and about working with boards all over North America, and we get to that part in strategic planning about, okay, guys, are you going to step up and be advocates? It's interesting that, and maybe it's just the time and the culture that we live in today, but boards used to be much more eager to step into the fray. And today they're really much more reticent. And so I will suggest to them something that you have done and we're going to talk about today. And they're much more willing to take that chance because they feel a sense of security as they go forward. So here's the deal. Anytime a developer pops his or her head into a destination with the announcement that they intend to build a $100 million full-service lakefront hotel, I think it's fair to say that the vast majority of us would instantly, publicly support such an addition to our community. Unfortunately, when that happened a number of years ago in Madison, the Bureau got almost immediate pushback from several historically supportive partners, including the mayor and the local innkeepers. So in the end, the project was built, but not originally as proposed. And the Bureau came out of this momentary nightmare reasonably unscathed. But Deb, you were determined to never allow an instantaneous, of course we support that, to ever happen again for your organization. So here's the first question. I know this brings up a painful moment in a generally stellar 24-year run as CEO, but would you be so kind as to retell the story that became the genesis of the destination marketing decision matrix?
Yeah, we all have, and you're in a position as long as I've been, you know, those times that are, as you said, painful. This was one of them. Madison sits on an isthmus, so we have lakes on either side, but there's not a lot of public access to our lakes. And we have one hotel that sits on one of our beautiful glacial lakes, a wonderful Art Deco property called the Edgewater, privately owned. And a man who grew up here always had a dream that he would buy it and put a lot of money into it. And that's what he stepped forward to do that. And as you said, projected putting $100 million into a essentially 200-room hotel, a lot of money to make it both a destination and a hotel. And because it's on the lake, which we want to celebrate our lakes and have visitors have access to, we very quickly jumped on board and said, you know, we need to be a face of this project and be part of this. And the developer was asking for a significant amount of TIF, which our city is not commonly known to work with private developers very frequently on TIF, unless it's a very blighted site, which this was questionably blighted. And actually, our mayor asked us to weigh in on this, and we were trying to please him and also felt as though it was the right thing to do. And we very quickly, our executive committee met literally within days of the request from the mayor and the developer and came out with a statement that we were supporting the development. We did not say we were supporting the TIF. We said that's really not our area of expertise, but we said that we certainly thought this project was really critical and exciting and a sort of next step for this destination to take. And we were excited about taking a position because we didn't do that very often. Well, the pushback immediately was from other hoteliers who we have a lot of private hotels in this community and our actually outgoing chair who sits on our executive committee promptly resigned from our board and said, if you're going to support a project like this, I want nothing to do with you and I'm likely pulling both our partnership dollars and certainly I am not staying involved in the organization. So that was a giant wake-up call and we didn't anticipate it. Wasn't on our radar screen and shame on us because we didn't anticipate that.
But ultimately the project did move forward.
In a different way, shape and form, less TIF. We had a change in mayors. And the mayor who came in when the project was ready to move forward lowered the TIF from, I think, $16 or $17 million to about $3 million. But at the same time, we were put on our heels in dealing with our private sector hoteliers. And not only did we have to work on mending fences, we had to pause and say, how do we not let this happen? And at the same time, how do we also exercise the place that we need to be, which is we need to be engaged in these conversations about projects or public policy that impact our visitor economy. And so how do we go about doing that in a more strategic fashion?
So that tees up the second question. So you survive, but you want to ensure that something like this never happens again. So tell us your next steps. What did you do to ensure that it wouldn't happen again?
Well, fortunate for us, our chair at the time, very strategic man, but not directly involved with the visitor industry. So he had a little more objective view and could help us step back a little bit. And Wayne was a terrific chair. We also had a gentleman on our board who was a city council person who did a lot of strategic planning for organizations like ours. And so our executive committee and this city council person came together and said, let's talk about, can we build a decision-making model that would allow us to have staff do some data research and assessment of whatever it is we may want to take into consideration, but then also have another body that the staff would then turn this data and information over to who would help vet it and then turn it over to our board and say, you know, do we want to engage in this conversation? And if so, at what level? And we needed the questions to really be, what is the risk benefit for the destination? Meaning we had to ask ourselves, you know, is this project good for the destination? Is it risky for the destination? And then the questions were, what are the risk benefits for our organization if we become engaged? And again, it could be public policy. It could be a project like the hotel. And within 6 months, we developed what we called our decision-making model and a community relations committee to put into place so that we would have valid strategy and data behind our decisions. Or we may decide not to get involved, depending on where the assessment came through using the matrix or the model.
So as our industry begins to understand that clearly our industry partners are kind of our clients and the visitors our clients, I think many of us are beginning to come to grips with the fact that our real client is our residents. So is there also a part of this decision-making process that asks, is it good for residents?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked that. Yes. So part of the decision-making model asks ourselves questions, is it good for the community? And also, is it good for our partners? Or the questions are, if there are questions about those things, where on a scale, because these are all done in sort of a scale.
Like a 0 to 10?
Yes. Where does it fall? And so it might be neutral, or it might have high impact, low impact, mid impact. And so we do ask our questions. So you're right. It's community. It's partners. It's for the, how does it impact the visitor or the destination, and then the organization. So we do a risk-benefit analysis for all of those audiences, so to speak. So we have that sense, and we know going in where we stand on those various factors.
And one of the interesting parts of the story, and you've told me this before, is how you ultimately beta tested this new tool. So tell us about the beta test and how that went.
Well, we beta tested it. We actually went back to this hotel project and came out in the same place we originally did, but we were more mindful of how did it impact our partners. It could impact our partners. It could impact the organization. It could impact our funding, meaning from private partners. So we beta tested it with that. We looked at a policy, public policy and a project. We also learned that the other thing we needed to do was we needed to also have sort of an expedited process, because in some cases we don't have 2 weeks or 2 months to vet the conversation. We might have 2 days. And so we needed to come up with, as I said, sort of an expedited version of this so we could move more quickly.
And I just think that that's just so perfect that your instinct, your gut instinct was right, that this was a project that absolutely the Bureau should have come down and said, absolutely, let's build this. But you didn't have, you know, the research behind the decision, but it had to have made you feel, you know, somewhat vindicated when going through the entire process, it comes back that, yeah, you were right. I mean, you know, you got toasted, but you were right.
Absolutely, Bill. Absolutely. It put everybody's mind at rest about that particular conversation. The other thing it did was it energized us to realize that our voice is important. People want to hear the voice. And we also talk about the voice of the visitor, because there's really nobody in our destinations who speaks for the visitor because they're voiceless, that we need to bring forward that voice of the visitor. And it energized us. And so we became more actively engaged than we had been. One of the questions we asked ourselves when we jumped into this was, if we don't say something, it really makes us sort of impotent. It puts us as there's this sort of neutered entity that we don't matter. We all talk about relevancy, and this was 10, 12 years ago. We wanted to be relevant. And so our voice was important, and you're right. We were vindicated. It made us realize we were doing the right thing.
You know, there are some boards, and I would say some CEOs, that know that they're on a tightrope, know that funding is always at risk, and have taken the other position of saying, I'm not going to rock the boat. I and my board will not be out there shaking the tree and being advocates for the destination because of what could happen to our budget or to our contract. And yet at the same time, I was in session with a board, and one of the board members was a city council member. And as the board kind of pulled back away from, I don't think we should do this, the city council person actually said, if you don't, I'm going to consider reducing your contract. He goes, I expect you. We may not agree. He goes, but I expect you to have a position on these things because we need your counsel. How have you found the city council, the county board, maybe even the state legislature, how have they reacted to a more robust advocacy program for Destination Madison?
I think very much the way that city council person is. I think they have come to value and in some cases seek our input. we have in some cases said, you know, this really isn't our area of expertise. And so it's not something we will become engaged in, or it's too far afield. When the whole Airbnb issue came up, and this has been now 5 years probably here, our city came to us and said, we need to address this and we need you to be there with us, helping create the policy and ask the questions we need to ask ourselves about how do we address this Airbnb, what they call transient rooming house issue here. And so it's elevated our position in the community and it's elevated our voice really dramatically.
That's great. Now, so you've been using this tool now for, I can't believe it's been almost a decade. Tell us if you can, when the tool has served to save your bacon and what lessons have you learned over the years?
It really saved us in another hotel development. We're trying to get a hotel built near our convention center that you helped get built here, Bill. It still hasn't happened, but we have been front and center in advocating for this hotel, which will need public funding. But the data that we've had and the information that we've been able to carry forward about why this is needed has always, always been in our toolbox and well-respected. That has been fantastic. It helped us with the Airbnb. It has also helped us as we have tried to push forward some initiatives that we think are important here, including the reimagining of a 164-acre campus that has a lot of trade show convention facilities where CrossFit's held, but it needs a lot of attention and money. And the fact that we are now well respected for the data we collect, we've helped lead that conversation that this community needs to pay attention to that. So it has been helpful in both defending projects that the general public agrees need to happen and also helped us move projects forward that may not have been on our community's radar screen. Because we're still using this decision-making model of where's the data, where's our information, where's our strategy, but also what's the risk-benefit analysis and how is it going to help the community? And then we get the community's attention about projects or policies that we think are important.
And you've got a very engaged number of citizens who sit on that vetting board.
Yes, that Community Relations Committee, we've had some lulls with it, either we haven't been engaging them enough or we haven't had enough going on, but we're actually sort of re-engaging that group and you've been able to participate over the years. It is a group, people would rather be on that than the board because it's action-oriented and yeah. It's getting their hands dirty in how do we make this place better.
Well, congratulations. It was fun watching the Matrix evolve over time. I wish I could be at those meetings more often. I'm on the road enough that I've missed my fair share. And that's always the bane of a consultant's existence. It's hard to be involved in the hometown on any boards or committees. But I make it every time I'm in town. So the conversations are always lively. So here's your bonus round question. Destination Madison has intentionally maintained a very public persona since 1990. But the organization really hit it out of the park last year with a public art project that was also an insanely successful fundraiser for the Guarding Against Cancer Foundation. I know you could go on for an hour on this win for the community, but give us the highlights and the lessons learned from such an ambitious event.
Yeah, that's a career highlight. So it was called Bucky on Parade, and University of Wisconsin, which is based here, Big Ten school, big competitor in a lot of sports. Bucky Badger is the mascot and beloved, not just here, but beyond. I will never take credit for this idea because it really came out of that great fellow, Josh Schomburger, who runs the Iowa City Coralville CBB. They had done it in Hawkeye Nation and approached us literally 15 years ago. They were going to franchise the idea and came to us and thought Bucky on Parade would be the next one. They had done Perky on Parade and been very successful. And we couldn't get any traction here. And it was something that never left my mind. And when I heard that Josh had done it a second time, 10 years later, more successfully, I called him and I said, you know what? Somehow we're going to pull the trigger. And it was an instinctual thing. This was a risky project. It was a little out of our wheelhouse. My concept was, how do we create an event that would both gain visibility for us because we want to keep that public persona, for the organization and the industry, but also how can we do something that would attract visitors? And that's certainly something that they had done in Iowa City. And so we had this incredible model, very generous person in Josh, and sharing his foils and successes. And we also had a staff member that was keenly interested in leading the project. It took 2 years to have it come to fruition. We had several thresholds along the way that if we didn't raise X amount of money or sell X amount of statues by such and such a date, it wasn't going to go forward because it was a very financially risky project. You needed a lot of money up front, $200,000, $400,000. And we kept hitting our thresholds, and it was a phenom. It was a complete phenom beyond what any of us ever thought it would be. It was more work than we ever dreamt, but it was so powerfully successful. The Buc-ee's were on parade from mid-May to mid-September last summer. 40% of the people that came to see the Buc-ee's that were following us that we could capture were from out residents inside the county. We had over 1,000 people that live here say they visited parts of our county they'd never been to. So there was exposure, and we put the statues in places we wanted exposed. We had 2,500 people come to our office to get buttons that said we found them all. And we did. We netted over $1 million for charity. We grossed $1.6 million. By the time we took out our expenses, $1 million went to charity, and we netted over $400,000.
That is amazing.
How this went viral was just, again, beyond our comprehension. And it endeared us to the community, but honestly, the most heartwarming part was we saw people the entire summer enjoying these statues with grandchildren, alumni coming back. They made trips back. We had 85 statues, and it was terrific, terrifically joyful and successful. And we really would love to find other communities that we think would fit this model and share it with them, because it's a really very special opportunity. It's sort of the cows on parade, but with a more local sort of spirit about it for a specific community.
Well, and the ability to raise $1 million for charity, that just boggles the mind. I mean, I think many destinations would be happy just that people came and took a lot of selfies and posted them and got them to go viral. But you add $1 million to it, that's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it was fantastic. The statue that went for the most went for $47,000.
Wow. Yeah, because you auctioned them off at the end.
We auctioned 25 of them at a fabulous gala at the end, which was also phenomenally wonderful. It's a career highlight. And it will be remembered here for years.
Well, and I remember it because, you know, you walk into almost any major office building in this community today, and there's one of them.
Yes.
It's in the lobby, or it's next to the elevators, and always a place of pride. So they live on throughout the community, and that's very cool. So congratulations both on the decision matrix as well as Buc-ee on Parade. It was a fun summer here in Madison, and I'm sure someone will take you up on that offer to share what you've learned about that type of a promotion. So, Deb, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule for this podcast. Always fun to share great stories, especially with such a great friend. And I want to give you an opportunity to plug the Advocacy Summit from Destinations International that's coming up this fall in Madison. Tell us what we can expect.
Oh, Bill, thank you. And I know that you're going to be a big part of this too. So it's the first time we've had a Destinations International event in Madison. It is the third Advocacy Summit, really supported by the Destinations International Foundation and Jack Johnson and his great team at DI. We will have very relevant conversations about what are the sorts of things that we need to be advocating? How can we better advocate? We will have case studies. We will have experts. We will have government officials, lobbyists. It'll be 2 days. It's November 12th to the 15th. 4 days prior to that, there will be CDME courses taking place in Madison too, including the core course that John Groh and I are co-faculty on advocacy. I think it's going to be fantastic. And I know Destinations International is excited about having an advocacy summit in a state capital where advocacy occurs on a daily basis. And I think it will add a real element of relevance by having it here in Madison, and we're very excited. And it will be at the Edgewater. The headquarters will be the Edgewater Hotel, which is the hotel we talked about at the beginning of the podcast.
That's perfect. And it is a gorgeous hotel, a great view of both the Capitol and the lake. And I would echo your invitation to everybody to come on out to our hometown and enjoy what it's all about here in the Mad City. So that's it for this edition of the Resurrected DMOU. Tell your friends and peers that we are back and looking forward to sharing, as we said on the original website, innovative ways to tell people where to go. Thanks again to our sponsor, Total Destination Marketing, a boutique destination brand agency led by Bill Baker. His new book is out, called Place Branding for Small Cities, Regions, and Downtowns, and you can find it on Amazon.com. DMOPros.com is where you will find links to the Z News, our knowledge bank, our video blogs, and more, as well as links to earlier episodes of the DMOU podcast. That's DMOPros with a Z. Executive producer of DMOU is Terry White, and this is a production of DMOPros. I'm your host, Bill Geist. Till next time.